You're listening to Last Word Soccer Club Radio. Only here. LastWordOnSports.com.
What's up, Internet? My name is Matt Pollard, and you are listening to Last Word Soccer Club Radio, only here, lastwordonsoccer.com, powered by Last Word on Sports Incorporated, Beautiful Game Network, and Roughneck Scarves. For your official scarf supplier for all MLS, USL, and US soccer scarves, go to roughneckscarves.com. We've got a great show for you tonight. It is Wednesday, October 9th, 2019. My good friend Daniel Sperry is busy adulting this week, so I brought in our other editor and one of my other trusted good friends in the soccer realm, my sister from another Mr., Rachel McCrigger. Rachel, how are you doing tonight, my friend?
I am great. I am excited for all of the soccer that we have going on with this entire month, and I did not realize how far in advance MLS Cup got moved up with the new playoff schedule, but I'm liking it.
Yeah, no, I hear you on that. With eliminated playoff teams, Rachel, assuming that the CBA doesn't cause any hiccups with the start of the season, and the season starts at the same time that it did this past season, there have been some rumors that they're thinking about actually kicking off the season in middle to early February, which isn't very fun for people other than those who want Snow Classico 4 here in Colorado. But so assuming that you have the first Saturday in March be the beginning of the season, and teams that were eliminated from the playoffs have potentially four upwards of 5 months of total off season. And so, you know, that's a lot longer than when we used to have, you know, with like the third weekend in October, the season being over. Usually MLS Cup is like December 9th or December 10th. And then it's basically the holidays and then the draft. And then, you know, it's a month out from MLS Cup being over to the preseason actually starting. So I'm not really sure what I'm going to do with myself now that the Rapids aren't playing. But speaking of that, Rachel, let us take some time and go over what happened this past Sunday in Major League Soccer. It was Decision Day 2019. Not a whole lot on the line in terms of major MLS teams. LAFC had already clinched the Supporters Shield. Only two playoff spots were up for grabs, and it was, you know, down to, you know, 3.5 teams with the Rapids 1% chance of making it. And then there was some seeding issues that we'll obviously talk on the other side, but I guess we'll start with the last two seeds in the Western Conference. FC Dallas gets a big win over Sporting Kansas City, 6-0. On Sunday, and that clinches their playoff spot. They just needed a win. They didn't have to worry about any other results. And then the Portland Timbers, with Diego Valeri out and Brian Fernandez entering the voluntary substance abuse rehab system within the league, was also unavailable, but that wasn't enough to stop the Portland Timbers, who got a 3-1 win over the San Jose Earthquakes, who were competing with. So FC Dallas gets a win, they lock in their playoff spot. Portland Timbers get a win, they lock in their playoff spot. In doing so, they eliminated the San Jose Earthquakes directly from that result without having to worry what FC Dallas was doing. Rachel, your thoughts on those games? And then I guess we can throw in LAFC and Colorado for the sake of including the fourth team that could still have gotten a playoff spot. Your thoughts on those results and these two teams kind of just barely sputtering over the playoff line to get into it for 2019?
As a Seattle Sounders supporter, I can't really say too much positive about Portland, but I can say I have been impressed with their goalkeeper, Steve Clark, this year. I think he's done a really admirable job of stepping up in place of Jeff Antonella and, you know, really taking over in goal. I think they're going to have a really interesting I'm trying to figure out, okay, who's going to be our starter next year and whatnot, but that's in the future. But right now, I think he's been doing a really good job for them. He's been an anchor on the defense for them and really, really leading the way for Portland. Losing Brian Fernandez is going to be tough for them, I think, in the playoffs. I think going up against Real Salt Lake, but they have the pieces. I know we were talking, Dan and I the other day, and he had mentioned that Darian Asparilla just turns it up in the playoff and just is on a different level. And we saw that last year in Seattle, him do a little crushing blow to my team. But Dan's right on that regard. I mean, he really does kick it up in the playoffs. So Portland really needs him to step up this year. They don't have an easy task with Real Salt Lake coming in. I think FC Dallas, I think they have a tough task too, because they're going to have to play the Sounders at home. CenturyLink Field is one of the bigger stadiums in MLS, and that place gets loud, and it gets loud fast. So I think it'll be exciting. I think Seattle has a few question marks on defense, so it'll be interesting to see if FC Dallas can exploit that up top. I know they just re-signed. I'm missing his name right now. The guy who just went to the national team to a new deal. So I think it'll be interesting to see how much that puts into perspective. Okay, well, we just paid you, so guess you got to go play now, and guess you got to tune it up for the playoffs. And then just for the Rapids, I think, you know, Rome wasn't built in a day. And I think this new regime that they've got going on up there is going to be a work in progress, but I think next year will be a good year of positives for them. Obviously losing Tim Howard is going to hurt. That could even be a type of situation where they scoop up a Jeff Antonella or another good solid backup goalkeeper, and avoid doing what Columbus did, aka taking a washed up goalkeeper like Joe Bendick and having him be your starter and say, hey, he's our franchise now. But I think for the Rapids, it was just unlucky that they got LAFC for their final game. I think if it was a different team, maybe not even like a lower team, like a non-playoff team, but even a playoff team, it would have been a different result. But I don't know. I think them just getting LAFC was really, really unlucky. And sorry, Matt, but you can jump on the Sounders bandwagon.
I'll just be enjoying the playoffs in general, and obviously not having to be planning like away trips or anything like that. No, I hear on all those accounts. Rachel, I think just one quick adjustment. I believe the proper pronunciation is Dairon Asprilla, and I definitely agree with Dan. He is the Eli Manning of Major League Soccer, so we'll see whether or not he can tune it up. And you know, I'm not implying that maybe they're going to play the New England Revolution, but you know, there's no, if there is an equivalent of the Patriots this year, I guess it would have to be LAFC, and even then they're not looking as good as they were, you know, 3-4 months ago. But you know, I think it's hard for me to judge Dallas and Portland for what they did. Obviously it was a must-win situation, so you know, you figured all the poor results they dropped, like, they knew exactly what they had to do. They did exactly what needed to be done from a result standpoint. But given the level of competition they were playing, like Sporting Kansas City, like they were down 2-0 at you know, 15 minutes in the game, and they pretty much just mailed it in from there. I don't know what to make of that result when previously, you know, Dallas was playing other playoff teams and it did not look good, nor was it pretty. And then, you know, the Portland Timbers are still just a hot mess. And, you know, and I'm not saying that from a standpoint of Brian Fernandez or anything and what he may be going through from a personal standpoint. But I mean, they were dropping results. They were, you know, weak at the back. They were lacking any kind of venom in terms of finishing their chances off. And now supposedly Diego Valeri's hurt, but then also, you know, he wasn't in the lineup when the team was struggling, and supposedly, you know, he was still negotiating his contract situation. So I don't know what's going on with either of them. I remember there's a funny gif that I remember Matt Doyle using to describe the collapse of the Montreal Impact a couple years ago when they barely made the playoffs and they were like number two in the Eastern Conference halfway through the season. And so it's a guy on a little slide going into the pool, and so he's sliding down the pool, and he basically is just like bouncing all over and falling. Then he ends up falling just on the edge of the pool and then barely in, and then like the text "in" comes in. So I don't know if this was like a, hey, we got a result and now we're in an okay situation for Portland or Dallas. I still have a lot of concerns about both these teams in terms of winning right now, and both of them having to go on the road. Dallas is one of the worst road teams of the playoff teams in the Western Conference. I don't like either of them to get a result, and I think in that this is going to be a fairly forgettable season. You know, I think Dallas probably has a little bit more hope, if for no other reason, then they've got a bunch of young kids, so they could say, okay, we made the playoffs in the first year with all the changes and everything. This is progress. Let's see what the kids can do. But I mean, if, you know, their star DP that they brought in midseason is dealing with some personal issues, and who knows what his future looks like, and you're not bringing back Diego Valeri, whose nickname is Mr. Timber, like, this is a far cry from where this team was a year ago going to MLS Cup, and I have no idea what they look like in 2020, and in that, I would not be very excited if I were you Timbers fans. Let's move on to some happier stuff from a results standpoint, Rachel. Atlanta United gets a result against New England Revolution by a score of 3-1. You had a nice celebration from Joseph Martinez going over to the bench and, like, taking a knee, almost like be knighted by Sir Parkhurst. Michael Parkhurst obviously playing in his last regular season game in MLS as he'll be retiring at the end of the season. And then the Seattle Sounders, you know, getting a result and ultimately getting that number two seed. Rachel, walk me through what those two teams did. You know, I would say on paper, you know, the number two teams in their respective conference. So now all Seattle Sounders has to worry about, you know, is taking care of business at home and then a potential away game at LAFC. And then obviously Atlanta United, Joseph Martinez is back. And the only thing they have to worry about, albeit a big problem away from Mercedes-Benz, would be going to a Yankee Stadium or maybe even a Citi Field to take on New York City FC.
Well, and I still think for Atlanta, they could win on the road because I think they're just that good of a team. And, you know, New York City, that's not taking anything away from them. But, you know, sometimes being that number one seed can come back and haunt you with, you know, maybe some overconfidence and whatnot. But I think for Atlanta, at least, you know, seeing Joseph Martinez get back into it after a slump, you know, we were there for the Zach DeBoer comments early in the season. Everyone wanted to put him in a dumpster, light it on fire, and push him into the Atlantic Ocean. And I mean, just the turnaround the club has had this year has been pretty remarkable to see. I mean, you expect greatness from the team because they won last year. And I don't think they're going to win it again this year, but I think they have a good chance to push and maybe even make it to a final. I think this year we'll get a Western Conference winner. And, you know, maybe that could be Seattle. I think they have a good shot of doing it. I think the defense needs a little bit of shoring up. You know, I had written a story today about the defense and who's going to start at center back. And, you know, poor Kim Keehee, he has played with 5 different center backs this season, 6 possibly. And it's just, They're very inconsistent in that regard. Chad Marshall retired earlier this summer. Xavier Arriaga has not been quite the defender they've hoped he's been. But, I mean, that's an adjustment period in itself. He doesn't know the language. He doesn't really know the style of play here. And then Roman Torres, had a 10-game ban for substance abuse issues, breaking the law, as we like to say. And I think having him back is definitely a positive because he's a big body. He's not afraid to get physical, and he scored his first MLS goal. It had to have been Roman Torres this past weekend against Ozzie Alonso and Minnesota United. So I think in regard for attack, I think as long as, you know, knock on wood, Jordan Morris and Christian Roldan come back from men's national team camp healthy, not hurt. Same with guys like Nico Lodero, Arriaga, Roman Torres. As long as they come back healthy, I think that Seattle's attack and midfield is going to be pretty good. But I think that defense just needs a little shoring up, specifically with who's going to be on defense with Kim at center back. And I think right now you have to go with the hot hand of Torres.
Well said, Rachel. You know, I think I guess my only concern mainly on the Atlanta front is just still some of their structure from a defensive standpoint, just given kind of how they finished the season. You know, yeah, they got a result against New England, but, you know, it's weird things happen when you play a team twice recently. Like, you'll see every once in a while, you'll get it where teams will actually have a home and away where, like, they play each other in back-to-back weeks within the league, or even, I think, at least one time this season, there was a game where they played each other on the Wednesday and then played each other at the opposite stadium over the weekend. So I don't know if maybe New England Revolution and obviously Bruce Arena's first ever appearance in an MLS game at Mercedes-Benz maybe helped them a little bit more on that one. But I still have to think that, you know, New York City FC at home playing on their pitch and being used to it as it is, I still think that they're probably the better team. And, you know, I think Seattle deservedly so, the number two team in the Western Conference. But, I mean, this, you know, especially with LAFC just not being as good they were earlier in the season, like, I feel like it's more of a crushed beer can, where I feel like there's a distinct couple of tiers in the Eastern Conference. New York City FC, I think, is clearly the best team on paper, especially with them having home field advantage. Then it's Atlanta and Philly. Philly hasn't looked well, but overall they're a solid team. They don't have a lot of weaknesses. Atlanta on the other front has some weaknesses, but has some star power. And then I feel like it's everybody else. You know, it's DC, New York Red Bulls, like, chop them, like, they could do whatever. They're inconsistent. I don't have a whole lot of faith in them. And if you're telling me that LAFC's not 100% with Carlos Vela having to play in the middle, you know, other than, you know, Portland and, you know, San Jose being at the bottom, like, RSL can make some noise. I can see the LA Galaxy doing something. Minnesota's going to be really good at home. Obviously, Seattle, like, it's just, it's less tiered for me. And in that, there's more uncertainty. You know, that's more hashtag team chaos, and I guess that's what I want, but we'll see what happens. Last thing that we're going to talk about on Decision Day, Rachel, Carlos Vela breaks the record with a goal against the Colorado Rapids in the first 30 minutes of the game, gets a bicycle kick, ultimately gets a hat trick. Things didn't go well again for the LA Galaxy and Zlatan Ibrahimovic against the Houston Dynamo, so Vela locks up the golden boot. He gets a hat trick to finish off Decision Day. I believe with that, LAFC, most points ever in MLS, most highest goal differential ever in MLS, and then the most goals for ever in MLS. Any doubt for you, Rachel, who the MLS MVP should be for this season?
Yeah, it should be Stefan Fribe, the Seattle. No, I think Carlos Vela is going to get it by a long shot, and I think it's well-deserved. I think that no matter what, at the end of the day, with an award like that, you're looking at the regular season, but I'm even more, I think, concerned to see how they do and specifically how he does in the playoffs. You know, last year we saw them go out in the first round, but it's so deserved. It's well deserved. And I mean, if anyone was going to break it, I think this season it was going to be him, just because of how good he's been and consistently good. And, you know, he's really had to carry the team more than once. And it's exciting to see a guy like that, who everyone said, you know, when he comes over from, I think he was in Germany, correct me if I'm wrong, England, before he came over here. So seeing him come over here and everyone writing his career off and saying, oh, well, he's not going to be a sharp because it's just MLS. You know, we hear that all the time. It's just MLS. It's the retirement league. But I think that Carlos Vela has really kind of given it a new look. And even, you know, previous MVPs like Joseph Martinez and whatnot have given it a different look. And it's exciting to see young guys like that get these awards for doing so well and really performing. So it's nice to see. Mexico should be giving him a nice ring soon, but we'll see.
Just to clarify, he was with England originally with Arsenal. Then he had a loan spell at some point with West Brom, but he was most recently with, prior to LAFC, Real Sociedad in La Liga. Mano, I agree with you on that. With that, Rachel, let's move on to some other things. It's been a while, folks, since we've spoken about anything national team related, and now we've obviously got a lot of news with the U.S. Women's National Team, who are finishing up their victory tour after winning the World Cup this past summer, and now obviously Jill Ellis will be departing the club, and I presume, you know, retiring, kind of hard to do anything better than back-to-back World Cups. And of course, Rachel, we have a bunch of people who are angry about the U.S. men's national team on Twitter. Total shocker there as the United States men's national team begins their Nations League campaign this coming week. They'll be taking on Cuba on Friday. And then, of course, their big rivalry, as we were talking about off-air. This is all sarcasm, folks. The United States taking on Canada as well. But we will start in meritocracy with the women's national team. So, Rachel, you know, this is a manager who you've had issues with or you think has been flawed in the past, but ultimately has been able to get results. What is Jill Ellis's legacy with the United States women's national team? And who's the favorite, if there's any, right now to take over this team that should be expecting to medal in the Olympics next summer? And obviously, they're going to have a big target on their back come the World Cup in 4 years' time.
You know, even though she's won back-to-back World Cups, I'm not going to sit here and give Jill Ellis an apology. That's never going to happen. I'm going to go to my grave defending my decision-making. But I think, you know, she's going to do the same thing, go to her grave defending her decision-making. And it paid off. I think it's a case, too, where, you know, you have such good players that, you know, maybe you don't have to do too much tactically. You just tell them to go out there and score and they do it, because that's just how good the team has been. But I think Jill Ellis is responsible for doing so much for the program, not just growing it as just soccer, but growing it as, you know, a humanitarian thing too, you know, with the equal pay thing, with being an openly out person. I think it's interesting to see her success and see her say, you know, I'm not always in the spotlight, but I will be in the spotlight for my players if needed. But, you know, first female coach to ever win back-to-back World Cup titles. It's really an amazing thing. She won the FIFA Best Award, which normally is not always the most accurate, Megan Rapinoe, but Jill Ellis is undoubtedly deserved of it. I mean, she's truly a remarkable coach, no matter what I say, but she has, you know, made some interesting interesting decisions on who to play, who not to play, who to bring up, who not to bring up. But she's also responsible for bringing the likes of Rose Lavelle, Sam Mewis, Lindsey Horan, players like that into the national team. And I really look at the Lindsey Horan thing and see how much she's grown under Jill Ellis and how much Jill Ellis's influence brought her to the United States to play with the Portland Thorns from Paris Saint-Germain. So I think she will always have a legacy within U.S. soccer, and I'm excited to see what she does next. I'm sure she's going to take some time off, but, you know, she's been open about, hey, maybe I will coach again. But for now, she's an ambassador, I know, for U.S. soccer, so that's going to be great. So she'll still be working around the scenes and whatnot. And, you know, to be quite honest with you, I wouldn't even be upset to see Jill Ellis take over a sort of technical director role for the women's national team, because she is really good at finding those players, especially at the college program. She has found some really good diamonds in the rough, Tierna Davidson, Rose Lavelle, you know, Mallory Pugh, youth players like that, finding them and bringing them up within the program. So, I mean, hats off to her. She's a great coach. She's a great person. She really, really changed the program. And I mean, now she's the winningest coach of all time, passing the late Tony DiCicco's record. She has 106 wins, close to getting that 107th, but South Korea proved to be a pretty good test in that final victory tour match. But it's great to see what she has done, not just for U.S. women's soccer, but just for women's soccer in general. And, you know, with that said, the next coach of the national team, there's all this, you know, women's soccer Twitter is probably one of the worst places to be if you're a male, because if you're a male, you're just automatically shamed. And I think there's so much pressure on the federation to keep up with this feminism and this keeping it with a female coach. And people are really calling for Laura Harvey from Utah Royals FC to take over. But, and while she is one of the front runners, there's also another front runner too, in Vlatko Andonovsky, who is from Reign FC. And I mean, for me personally, I would rather see Vlatko take the job. I think he's such a good coach. He won two championships with the former FC Kansas City. And ironically, he won them both against Reign FC, who was coached by Laura Harvey. And in the last 2 years that he's been with Reign FC, he's taken them to the playoffs. Harvey has not been able to do so. With Utah, they missed out this year, Reign FC edging them out. But I look specifically at what Vlatko was able to do this year with Reign FC. And that was, you know, there were times where they had an injury list of 13, 14 different players. Technically, Casey Murphy is their third string goalkeeper, and they managed to make it to the playoffs. No Megan Rapinoe for the entire year up until the end of August. That was when she made her club debut. So to be able to pull it together, a ragtag team, and really just throw them to the wind and say, all right, give it what you got, and see results come in is really spectacular. And he's also another really good one at finding these diamonds in the rough. He drafted the first ever player to come out of a school that isn't in the NCAA. He drafted NAIA product Bethany Balser, who is one of the favorites for Rookie of the Year with 6 goals this year. So I think what Vlatko has done has proven himself worthy of the job. And I know that there's players that are backing him. Allie Long had mentioned during the match at Red Bull Arena that she would totally be behind Vlatko getting the job. And I know there's a lot of other players that highly respect him. He's a great guy to talk to. I got to meet him in Washington, knows his stuff. And I would personally rather like to see him get the job. I wouldn't be upset if Laura Harvey got it, but those are your two front runners right now. And I believe the Equalizer put out a report the other day saying that they're going to try to get their coach nabbed before the November 7th friendly against Sweden. But it's also tricky timing because the NWSL final is in Cary, North Carolina on October 27th. And if Reign FC goes, that means Vlatko goes. So it'll be interesting to see who they pick. And it's really all in Kate Markgraf's hands, their general manager. So fingers crossed, I'm hoping it's Vlatko. But, you know, if Laura Harvey's the choice, she's also a really great coach and has really, really brought up good teams. So excited to see who it's going to be.
Well said on that front, Rachel. U.S. soccer is rot with bureaucracy, especially on the men's side with all the turnover and everything that they had and the election and everything that went into the appointment of Ernie Stewart and then eventually Ernie Stewart and his appointment of Greg Berhalter. You mentioned the timing of this. I guess things are maybe not of the essence in terms of 2019, as you just mentioned, with the end of the NWSL season, and then obviously there'll be a number of friendly periods as well, but you've got the Olympics next summer, so in theory, you're gonna want as many camps as possible in terms of bringing the roster together. You know, should Blacco or Lauren Harvey go with a different system, or, you know, something very different from Jill Ellis, or maybe rotating up the squad or something, you know, uncertainty with maybe some of the veterans or some of the young players who would come in, you know, not unlike a Lindsey Horan or a Mallory Pugh of Colorado, for example. So I guess I'm just wondering where that search is from a timing standpoint, you know, let's say after November 7th because of the NWSL season. But I mean, is there anything that would be holding things up at that point? Or as soon as that happens, you would assume anybody who'd be coaching or involved with the NWSL would be available for discussions, contract negotiations, actually signing to get them in as quickly as possible. You know, the men, you know, had a bunch of time to wait because they didn't have anything for 2 years until the Gold Cup. But, you know, the women are going to have something and, you know, they're going to be preparing for that, you know, probably starting next May, probably. And so in that, you know, you're given a new coach 6 months for a major tournament and a tournament that the U.S. is trying to win that they did not do very well in last go around.
Yeah, and I think you have to be mindful, too, of the NWSL in general, because if these are your two front runners, you've got two coaches that are, you know, at this time, even though you're in season, you're already planning for next season. So you have to be mindful of that, and you have to realize, you know, if we take a coach from one of these teams, we have to find a coach for that team that we're taking him from. But I think U.S. soccer is a little more, I don't know what the right word to use is, adamant maybe about finding a coach sooner rather than later because of the Olympics. And, you know, the coach is going to have to make some decisions. That roster goes from 23 to 18, I believe. And so you're cutting five different players off that roster, maybe bringing in five newer players. You know, it's an interesting process, and it'll be interesting to see who the coach is. And it'll be one of those things that you have to look at too. If, you know, a Laura or a Vlatko gets hired, are they going to bring up a ton of their Utah Royals players or a ton of their Reign FC players that, you know, maybe haven't gotten called up? And I just hope that for me, the new coach is a little more ambitious than Jill Ellis. I think a lot of times we saw the same old, same old, same old, same old, same old get called in just because they had names. Kelly O'Hara was injured for all of the World Cup. Alex Morgan, yeah, she scored 5 goals against Thailand. Woohoo. She really didn't do much else except for that goal against England. And she hasn't performed well for her club team. And I was talking about this with our good friend Trevor Tracy the other day, who writes about LAFC for us. It's with the men's team, it's you call up players who are performing at their club level. With the women's national team, it's you call up players who have been there before and who have a name within the program. And I don't think that's right. I think the new coach needs to be a little bit more ambitious. Call in those players that haven't gotten the caps or the minutes. It's time to rely on the people that you've got. You shouldn't be playing Crystal down in a left back spot when you have almost the entirety of the NWSL at your disposal and there are capable left backs that can take the role. I think, you know, you have players that are aging. Carly Lloyd, my opinion, shouldn't go to the Olympics. Done like dinner. I don't think Tobin Heath is really going to be going to the Olympics, although she is still performing well. I think there's others who are performing better than her. So I think you have to look at those things, and I think you have to be a little bit more ambitious. And I think it's time to get rid of the egos in U.S. soccer, players who think that they have a right to be there and who have, you know, won 2 World Cups and they still need to be there and be in the starting 11, Carly Lloyd. It's time to start cutting loose with a couple of those players. Hey, your time's up. You did a great job, but we need to move on to the new generation, a new batch of younger players. So I just hope and I pray that they listen to me because Jill didn't.
All right, I guess let's transition to some less fun stuff. And that, of course, is the ever frustrating United States men's national team, Rachel. Last international window didn't go super great from a result standpoint. I think I'm seeing measurable progress, but I completely understand a bunch of people who say that there hasn't been, or who simply saying progress or not, expectations or not, ultimately losing to Mexico in a Gold Cup final was a failure. And now the U.S. has their first competitive matches to play since that Gold Cup, and they'll be playing in the Nations League. Cuba, you know, not really a nation to be feared from a world soccer at the international stage level. And then obviously Canada, who I assume will be really excited for this game given their circumstances. We'll see how lackluster the United States men feel about it. But in any case, we haven't had you on to actually talk about Nations League. So just your general thoughts on Nations League as it exists in world football, as it exists within CONCACAF, and how seriously, what lens United States soccer fans should be viewing that given where the federation is at and where this team is at in terms of Greg Berhalter trying to implement things, changing things, and just, you know, this roster and rah, Sergino Dest is going to Ajax and the Netherlands, blah.
I feel the same way on that last sentiment, and watch what you say about Cuba, because we said that about Trinidad and Tobago too, and look what happens. So you better watch it there. I think, you know, people need to pay a little bit attention to Nations League. I don't think it's something that is going to be a showstopper, but, you know, for example, if we don't put the ball in the net within 10, 15, 20 minutes against Cuba, then there needs to be some adjusting. There needs to be some problems that need to be fixed. But overall, I don't really have too much of an opinion on it. Canada and Cuba, yay. But I think my issue with the roster lies with, I just think there's too much MLS guys that really haven't proven their worth to me too much. I think that Greg Berhalter is going to start the same people he always starts. You know, somebody could be netting 50 goals a season, but guess he's still starting? Jossy Zardes. I think it's just a frustrating process to see so many guys getting passed up in Europe, where, you know, that is where the quality football is being played. And in MLS, there's, you know, it's a competitive league, of course, but I just don't think that there's a few names on there that really haven't done much for me. And I think, you know, this is where Nations League has to be where Greg Berhalter decides something on his defense, because this three center back thing is not working out. And having DeAndre Yedlin back is a huge, huge pickup, because now you do have a capable right back or left back. He can play both. And then you have two center backs, and then you have your left or right back, whatever one Yedlin doesn't want to play. But I think just having him back is a huge, huge pickup. And, you know, when you get Tyler Adams back, that's going to be big. But I think right now, just there's so many question marks in so many different spots, and you don't know exactly what Michael Bradley's role is. You don't know exactly what, who your starting center backs are going to be. And I think that's something where 2-3 years ago, I should actually say 3-4 years ago, you knew it was going to be Jeff Cameron and Omar Gonzalez, or Omar Gonzalez and Matt Beisler. And now you don't really have that anymore. There's so many question marks, and I think that needs to get shored up.
Well said, Rachel. I guess the only thing that I'll add is, you know, I still want to see progress, but obviously now there's something to actually go from a result standpoint. So maybe where Greg Berhalter in the past, you know, like the game against Mexico, was airing, you know, let's play out of the back and let's just experiment with that until guys figure it out. Now you've got games, albeit against significantly weaker competition other than like Alphonso Davies to actually deal with. So I'm curious to see just what does that look like, both from the attack and from the defensive standpoint. And do we see him be a little bit more pragmatic, given that there are results that need to be had? And ultimately, there's punishment in this one. You know, fans have kind of been maligning the Nations League because, you know, what the United States needs to do to be successful in CONCACAF is very different than what they would need to do in a knockout round game of a World Cup against, you know, a European power that they're, you know, far outmatched by from a talent standpoint. But, you know, if you end up finishing bottom in the Nations League, now you're going from playing nations like these to playing even crappier ones, and then it becomes, you know, that much more of, you know, purely an academic exercise. So I'm curious to see if we see either an evolution in terms of the players have made a bunch of mistakes in the last year with this system, and then maybe something starts to click to now where progress and mistakes leads to lessons learned and then ultimately results, or do we see Greg Berhalter shift things up because now there are games that actually need to be won than games that need to be played, and you kind of do whatever and, you know, be damned to the fan base. let's transition to some other stuff, Rachel. We did want to bring you on because we are on the eve of the NWSL playoffs. So walk me through how the NWSL season's going so far, and what teams do you like going into the playoffs, and more importantly, why is it the Chicago Red Stars?
I think it's been a really good season. I think, you know, after the World Cup, you saw this bump of attendance pretty much everywhere except, oddly, Houston. Houston didn't really have a bump. You know, seeing matches for Sky Blue go to Red Bull Arena and having talks of maybe Red Bull Arena is going to be their home next year is exciting. Having the Red Stars fully take on SeatGeek Arena, SeatGeek Stadium, excuse me, is really, really exciting. Reign FC has a new home this year. And, you know, hopefully Orlando can start filling up seats, but they need a product to do that because right now they're in last place. But I think for right now, the focus is on the four teams that are going to the playoffs. There is not going to be a decision day in NWSL because that happened last week. We had Reign FC take the spot. Washington, they had a really nice chance to do it. They're a young team. They're a really good team. Richie Burke really turned that organization around, and the players have really bought into his program. So it's nice to see that kind of growth that they had. They had 11 points last year, and I think right now they have 33 or 34. So it's exponential growth, and I'm excited to see what they can do next year. But right now, same four teams that made the playoffs last year, same four teams going to the playoffs this year. But I think right now it's a bit of a tide turning. North Carolina has a huge advantage because since they got first place, which, by the way, third NWSL Shield in a row, no team has ever done that before. So they are hosting the semifinal, but they are also hosting the final. So if they win, they're going, well, technically, yeah, if they win, they're going back to back to back because they're playing at home this weekend against Sky Blue. I think it's exciting what Chicago's doing. You have Sam Kerr, who broke her own NWSL goal scoring record of previously 17 goals. Now she has 18. Chicago has a bye week this week. They don't play another regular season game, so that's where the record's going to stand. I think Chicago has a real good chance of making it to that final. I think it'd be interesting if they did. Last year, North Carolina and Chicago was one of the semifinals. And as we know, North Carolina lifted the trophy last year. They have a chance to do it for the second year in a row. Portland's back in it, but Portland losing Lindsay Horan for the time being. There's no timetable really on how long she's going to be out. I know they're getting Tobin Heath back. I know you're so upset because of Colorado, but not a great injury for her. She really got banged around in that game against Reign FC. So no idea how long she's going to miss out, but that's definitely going to hurt their chances if she's not available for the semifinal. But third place is up for grabs currently. It's between Portland and Reign FC. Chicago, North Carolina, they're locked in the hosts. I think Reign FC actually has a chance to win it all this year. I mentioned earlier about the laundry list of injuries, but I think that if any team can do it, it would be North Carolina to pull off a major upset. I don't think Portland is as sharp as they were last year. And honestly, I just don't want them to go to the final because I feel like North Carolina will, and I don't want to see a third straight NWSL final of North Carolina and Portland. I think that would be boring. I think it's time to change it up a little bit. Wouldn't be upset if Chicago won. I'd love to see Sam Kerr get that trophy. And, you know, with talks of her potentially leaving to go to Europe, I think, you know, maybe missing out on a trophy could possibly get her to stay because being so close yet so far. But I don't know. I think they have a really good chance of winning. And then obviously you have Nair and Nett, and we saw what she does with the national team, and she's just so, so good. So I think it's going to be an exciting playoffs. It starts next weekend, not this weekend. And we'll just see what happens. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm going down to North Carolina for it, so stay tuned, folks.
Okay, well said. Anything else that we want to talk about, Rachel, or shall we head to the roundtable?
Go Reign FC. Other than that.
All right, so we got a couple things to talk about, folks. We kind of did away with this with everything with the playoff race, but now, you know, we've got a couple weeks with MLS playoffs not starting until October 19th, so we'll definitely have a full preview for that next week, hopefully with Dan back for that one. But we got our first pink slip of the offseason for Major League Soccer, Rachel, and that was James O'Connor of Orlando City SC. He came into the club midway through last season. They continued to be really bad and ultimately missed the playoffs. Brought in Nani at the beginning of this season, had a bunch of really exciting games, a bunch of offense, Dom Dwyer not really scoring a whole lot and the defense still really struggling. You know, they could lose 1-0, they could lose 3-4, but they weren't going to beat anybody 3-0 for the most part. And ultimately unsuccessful and not a very good team at home. And so James O'Connor was part of the problem for me, but he wasn't the main problem. I'm still just concerned about what this team's doing from a front office roster construction standpoint and just how they're not able to get together consistently from what they're doing offensively and what they're doing defensively. And I felt this way about Orlando for a number of years. I'd be curious to know if you disagree, Rachel, but the fan base just seems really, really impatient. You know, they had a lot of success in USL. They got the shiny new stadium and everything, and I think they kind of just expected, especially with Kaká, to be coming out of the gates the way that Atlanta did, and it hasn't worked for a whole host of reasons. So I'm wondering if the firing of James O'Connor is just, you know, the annual sacrificial lamb to say he was the main problem and we'll get it right next year. So I'm curious to know where they go from a head coaching standpoint. Obviously, O'Connor came in middle of last year, and that was just in a very different place as far as the head coaching caliber was expected of MLS teams. You know, O'Connor came in at the time, you know, Caleb Porter was taking his year sabbatical after, you know, leaving on good terms with the Portland Timbers. And the expectation was kind of any big job that came open was going to be Caleb Porter's to lose. Porter ultimately ended up getting the Columbus Crew job, but that was after Frank DeBoer came to Atlanta. That was after GBS and Matias Almeida went to clubs in Los Angeles, and that was after the two, probably at the time and maybe ever, best assistant, Dave Sarakin's the best assistant coach ever in MLS, but in any case, at the time, the two best assistants in MLS in Robin Fraser, now with the Colorado Rapids, and Mark Dos Santos, previously with Bob Bradley's staff, now obviously with the Vancouver Whitecaps, took that job. So Orlando made a move mid-season that I thought was good, given that James O'Connor had had success in USL, was aware of the domestic players, you know, had done a really, really good job with Louisville City, but then suddenly, okay, Orlando's bad, we're rebuilding now, and suddenly the ante just gets way upped in terms of the expectations for a head coaching hire in MLS. And so I think, you know, unfortunately, I think any chance that anybody from a USL team had of really getting an opportunity in MLS in terms of jumping from USL head coach to MLS head coach is probably dead with this, because you probably had, at least since the rebrand of, you know, the USL Pro going to USL and now obviously the USL Championship, you know, James O'Connor was the best coach and they had the best team with Louisville City and they won back-to-back USL Cups and everything, and he flames out basically in 18 months, really lacklusterly with Orlando City on a team that had a budget, and, you know, Nani fell into his lap for the beginning part of the season and they still weren't able to make the playoffs. I think if you're a USL manager who's really kicking butt, such as a Bob Lilly with the Pittsburgh Riverhounds, I think if they wanted to, you know, if they really wanted an opportunity in MLS, they'd probably have to get a really good opportunity as an associate head coach or an assistant head coach under a proven and respected manager, and for that team to have success before that happens. But I just, you know, unless they really knock it out of the park with a South American coach or something like that, I'm just not really sure where Orlando City goes, and I'm not really sure what this team's doing from a roster construction standpoint, and I'm not really sure what opportunities anybody in the lower divisions is ever going to get in terms of a head coaching opportunity in MLS. With that, Rachel, we've talked, you mentioned you know, the Chicago Red Stars taking over Bridgeview. There's a lot of news for the Chicago Fire, some of it good, some of it bad. Walk me through what's happened for the men in red.
Well, if Bob Lilly wants to join a staff, he can join Jurgen Klinsmann's out in Chicago. This is the one and only time we are mentioning this in the show. There was a rumor that Jurgen Klinsmann turned down a job with the Chicago Fire. Take with that what you will. Moving on. Chicago Fire is back at Soldier Field. It's a really exciting deal for them. I know the mayor worked really hard on getting them back into Soldier Field, and always having your team directly right in your city is a great thing. Obviously, more seats, it's a scenic view. I think that, you know, maybe it'll motivate Chicago to do even more instead of just beating Orlando 5-2. I think it's a great deal for the players. I think it's definitely going to be an attractive piece for players who want to come to MLS. I know they're are some players that want big cities and being in Chicago. I mean, aside from New York and Los Angeles, how much bigger can you get than that? It's going to be a great, great, great deal for them. I'm excited to see how many season tickets they sell, how many people get to the stadium and root on the team. Maybe even a couple guest matches for the Chicago Red Stars. I know it's happened before when Chicago wasn't playing at SeatGeek. So I'm excited to see if that would turn into something. But great news for Chicago Fire, and hopefully Jurgen Klinsmann stays far away from that stadium as possible.
Well said, Rachel. Last thing that we talk about before we get to some of the MLS players, but in any case, there's been some rumblings. A number of MLS teams potentially involved in negotiations with Olivier Giroud, who is a French international, and he's a striker for Arsenal Football Club. Arsenal Football Club going through some changes, and maybe Giroud's a little bit of dead weight as a 33-year-old striker for Unai Emery, and obviously things aren't going super great for Arsenal this season to begin with. Not that anybody was really expecting that to happen anyways. So the rumblings are that Vancouver Whitecaps would be interested in him, maybe spending some of that Alphonso Davies cash that they got earlier in the year from Bayern Munich. But then also reports, and you know, obviously this is with rampant speculation, that Giroud would be interested in coming to MLS, but it would be only to a couple of select cities, and it's the usual ones that you would expect, folks. New York, LA, Miami, with Inter Miami coming to the league next year, and Chicago is also in there, so maybe Giroud is taking the place of Bastian Schweinsteiger with that, or, you know, I'm not sure if Giroud would have overlapped with any of the random friendlies. Maybe he really likes Soldier Field or something from his time, you know, in the ICC championship, maybe. In any case, this is interesting. I think Giroud would be a good addition to the league. You know, another French international who I think would be, you know, maybe a good, not a recruiter, but in the same way that anytime anybody within the Premier League who's in England, who's English, who is thinking about coming to MLS, if they need a good word, you know, Steven Gerrard, Frank Lampard, certainly David Beckham are there to provide that good word. And we don't really have that in terms of a major French international, at least not someone actually from France. Obviously, there's French speakers from some of the Africans like Didier Drogba. But I think this would be really interesting. I'd be curious to know, at least from a salary standpoint, what that would mean in terms for the Vancouver Whitecaps. And, you know, is Arsenal looking to get a transfer fee out of the situation? Obviously, Giroud's 33, so he's probably looking to just be comfortable and finish out his career. So what does that look like from a term standpoint? But it's a big name. It'd be interesting. It'd be a splash for Vancouver. It probably would be, you know, a secondary piece or, you know, a complement to something else that, you know, any of the other teams would be involved in. You know, I think David Beckham at Inter Miami would be looking to have more of an impact player than, you know, a guy who wasn't even, you know, who didn't even score that many goals for a team that won the World Cup 2 years ago. So Giroud could be like that secondary piece to a Luis Suarez that they've rumored, or, you know, an Edison Cavani. And I think certainly it would be a nice piece, but more of a marketing piece than an actually on the field standpoint for, say, an LA Galaxy, you know, who are probably going to want to try and keep Zlatan this year, or certainly either of the New York teams. With that, Rachel, let's pour a few beers out for some of the retiring players in MLS. DeMarcus Beasley finished out his season in tears, and with a win with the Houston Dynamo. Michael Parkhurst and Nick Raimondo will be playing in the playoffs, but, you know, their season could end at any time with it being single game elimination. And then obviously Tim Howard finishing out his career with a near playoff comeback for the Colorado Rapids. I guess I'll just throw it generally to you. You also mentioned Bastian Schweinsteiger. Where do you want to start, and what do we make of this, you know, a really solid class of players who will be finishing out their season in MLS in 2019?
Excuse you, you forgot Chad Marshall.
And I forgot Chris Wondolowski. I apologize to the Chad Marshall fan club and to Chris Wondolowski and the Chris Wondolowski fan club.
I don't know how big that fan club is, but I think that that's such a great class of players, and it just shows the success. And a lot of these players are American players over the years. I mean, Nick Raimondo and Tim Howard totally got a tongue twister there for a minute. I mean, that's like your golden age of MLS, of U.S. men's national team goalkeeping. They're so good. I mean, who can forget Tim Howard's legendary saves against Belgium in 2014? And sad we didn't get to see him do that again in another World Cup, pour out an extra shot for that. But I mean, it's a great class. It's obviously a Hall of Fame class for sure. I mean, seeing these names go, it's exciting to see new players come up. But I mean, like looking at RSL, like Nick Raimondo has been there forever, literally forever. And so seeing them with a new goalkeeper next year is just going to be odd and weird. Seeing a defense without Chad Marshall is going to be weird, and not hearing Wando shouted throughout the stadiums is going to be really, really, really weird. These are players that have had staples in MLS, and some of these players are guys who have really brought a spark to MLS, like Schweinsteiger. So, I mean, it's a great class. Wish them all the best. So many kids were inspired because of them, especially because of DeMarcus Beasley being one of the first men of color to really get into the sport and really succeed in it, and inspiring kids. I remember Jose Altidore had put out a post just absolutely praising him and saying, you know, you were the guy I looked up to. And so it's exciting to see the legacy that they've left behind. But pour out a beer, Matt. Pour out a beer.
Well said, Rachel. You know, I me and Mark Goodman, did our proper Tim Howard tribute, this week with Holding the High Line. But, you know, I'll just say just a really classy group of guys as well. You know, not just them being great soccer players, but, you know, great ambassadors of the sport. You know, Beasley, obviously, everywhere he went, he played. Everywhere he went, he was an effective player and ultimately got results. You know, Chris Wondolowski with kind of a cryptic tweet about, you know, his uncertain future. But, I mean, you know, he is the heart and blood of the San Jose Earthquakes, and obviously he represented the club with, you know, nothing but respect and endearment, and was, you know, an absolute ambassador for the sport in San Jose. You could say it's the same thing of Chad Marshall, starting off in Columbus and then obviously finished things out with the Seattle Sounders and a bunch of trophies that he won there with Siggy Smith and then now Brian Schmetzer. Obviously Bastian Schweinsteiger, you know, who had his various farewells both in English and in German, over the last couple of days, you know, was even respectful in saying, you know, thank you to Manchester United when probably he was done dirty by them from that situation. But I mean, you know, just an absolute classy group of players, you know, a bunch of great interviews to be had, great ambassadors for the sport. You know, I hope that they're not all completely going away. You know, Beasley kind of teased that, you know, he was interested in the business side of soccer, but I think, you know, he said it well, you know, when he was kind of limping off, you know, he's just like, I have nothing left to give. Like, I don't have a single calorie or, you know, leap left in my body that my body is physically capable of giving to the game. Like, he is the, you know, there's a great spiel from Phil Ingvall about, like, how to approach, like, your life and death, and ultimately, and, like, he basically said that, like, at his funeral, like, everybody's gonna be at the wake, and they're just gonna be like, sheesh, this guy partied. Like, I feel like that was, you know, DeMarcus Beasley, but, like, not in an autopsy or an awake sort of way, but just, like, we look back at his career, and we look at, you know, what he is now physically, you know, at, you know, I think he's turning 52 in a couple of minutes. You know, it's just like he does not have anything more to give to the game. And I think he gave as much as anybody physically could have over the course of, you know, from the moment he started kicking a ball to when he made his professional debut to when he made his international debut to ultimately walking off the field in the final minutes of a 4-2 win for the Houston Dynamo on Sunday. So I hope this isn't the last time that we see them. You know, I'm going to assume that Bastian Schweinsteiger is probably going back to Germany. So whether or not he has something going on in Germany with Bayern Munich or with the Federation, you'll see what goes on with that. You know, I think if nothing else, Chris Wondolowski will be on Twitter, you know, hyping up the San Jose Earthquakes, or maybe buying season tickets next year with the Ultras, so he can take off his shirt when the San Jose Earthquakes ultimately score a goal. But it was fantastic to watch every single one of these guys play in MLS and otherwise, and hopefully this isn't the last time that we hear from them, because they're great people, they're great professionals, they're great soccer players, and great representatives for the sport. That does it for us for all the stuff that we have. It is time for last words. Rachel, do you have any last words, any shameless plugs, and where can people find you on the Twitter machine?
Be sure to check out my coverage of the NWSL playoffs. I'll be down in North Carolina on October 27th. Really excited. I'll be there for media day and whatnot. So if you want really good access, I'll be posting on my personal Twitter at Rachel McKrigger, 2 A's, not just one. And at Last Word on Soccer, I'll be uploading a ton of videos from the playoffs there. So be sure to check it out. Go Seattle in the playoffs. And Tim Howard, let me know when you buy Memphis.
All right. Well said. Listeners, you can follow me on Twitter at LWS Matt Pollard. Check out all of our work all season and all year long at lastwordonsoccer.com, at lastwordsc on all social media platforms. And then you can subscribe to Last Word Soccer Club Radio. Wherever you get your podcast, just search us or LWS Radio. You'll find us and a bunch of other great content from our LWS family. Thank you again to our sponsor, Roughneck Scarves, the official scarf supplier of MLS, USL, and US Soccer. Get your custom scarves for your group or team at roughneckscarves.com. We'll see you next week for our full MLS playoff preview, folks.